TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. This program is dedicated to the memory of Chernobyl, 25 years after April 26, 1986. In parts 1 through 3 of this program, you got to know about a book, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. It finally became freely available in April 2011. The English language editor, Dr. Jeanette Sherman, writes, "This is a collection of papers translated from Slavic languages and written by leading authorities from Eastern Europe. Although there has been discussion of the impact of nuclear accidents, and Chernobyl in particular, never before has there been a comprehensive presentation of all the available information concerning the health and environmental effects of the low-dose radioactive contaminants. Official discussions from the International Atomic Energy Agency and associated United Nations agencies have largely downplayed or ignored many of these findings reported in the Eastern European scientific literature. Consequently, they have come to the wrong conclusions by not including these assessments." And in a recent email, Jeanette Sherman wrote, "As we watch events unfold at the Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan, radioactive nuclides are spreading around the Northern Hemisphere. The authors of Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, Professors Alexei Yablokov and Vasily Nestorenko and their colleagues, cite some 5,000 studies of wild and domestic animals, birds, fish, plants, trees, mushrooms, bacteria, viruses, and humans. They were all altered, some permanently, as a result of the Chernobyl radioactive releases. Animals and humans developed similar abnormalities and diseases, including birth defects and cancers. Radioactive releases from Chernobyl continue today, 25 years later. This book documents the never-ending perils from nuclear power, Fukushima being the most recent." End quote by Jeanette Sherman. In 1991, a desperate appeal was made by Belarusian and Ukrainian doctors to take the children away from Chernobyl's radioactive environment. All they asked for were vacations, so the children had a chance to eat clean food in a safe environment and detoxify their bodies from some of the embedded radioactive substances that they absorb in everyday life, most often with their food. Substances such as cesium, cobalt, thorium, plutonium, etc. Due to their long half-lives, these substances will remain in the environment for decades and even hundreds to thousands of years. The focus is on children because research has shown that their small and developing bodies are more affected than the adults around them. When this appeal was first made, 5 years had passed since the nuclear disaster. The world had already started to forget about the millions of adults and children forced to live with its toxic after effects. Many people believed that the danger was over, that the threat had been contained. In fact, the effects of intense radiation, mass displacement, poverty, and lack of medical treatment continues to create intolerable conditions for the inhabitants of Belarus, Western Russia, and the Ukraine. That appeal started a small but committed movement that continues to this day. It includes organizations that offer vacations, medical treatment, even heart surgery for children who suffer from Chernobyl heart, a condition caused by cesium-137. Help also goes to this day to orphanages and individuals who are dealing with some of the most heartbreaking birth defects that have become so tragically common in Belarus and the Ukraine. One of these organizations is Chernobyl Children's Project International. Their website gives a snapshot of the continuing problem these organizations are trying to address. Today in the Ukraine, 6,000 children are born every year with genetic heart defects. More than 3,000 will die for lack of medical attention. Children born since 1986 are affected by a 200% increase in birth defects and a 250% increase in congenital birth deformities. More than 1 million children continue to live in contaminated zones. The mortality rate among the population already outstrips their birth rates. 99% of the land of Belarus has been contaminated to varying degrees above internationally accepted levels. 2,000 towns and villages were evacuated, and more than 400,000 people have been relocated from their homes since 1986. Decades later, another 70,000 are still waiting to evacuate. The cost of the Chernobyl blast and its consequences is being carried by the survivors and will be handed down to their children for generations. The Chernobyl disaster costs Belarus 20% of its annual national budget. And that's just part of a list of the ongoing problems caused by the Chernobyl catastrophe as posted on the website of Chernobyl Children's Project International. Today's last of four programs presents the final chapter from the book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. It focuses on radiation protection and is maybe the most pertinent to the events at Fukushima. Entitled Radiation Protection After the Chernobyl Catastrophe, it presents important information on the danger of contaminated food, on treatments to diminish the radionuclides absorbed by the human body, also on how to reclaim agricultural land and how to set up ongoing measures in the public health system to deal with the persisting radiation of the long-lived isotopes, such as cesium and plutonium. This chapter relies in large part on the work of the late Vasily Nestorenko. He was director of the Institute of Nuclear Energy at the National Academy of Sciences of Belarus at the time of the accident. And he became one of the heroes of the Chernobyl catastrophe. He flew over the burning reactor to take the only radiation measurements and threw liquid nitrogen into the exploding reactor core. Nestorenko survived initially, while three of the four passengers of his helicopter died very soon from irradiation. Nestorenko left the nuclear establishment and dedicated his life to helping children in the aftermath of the catastrophe. Since 1990, he had been the director of the Belarusian Independent Institute of BelRad. The State Security Agency of Belarus threatened him with internment in a psychiatric asylum as he refused work on a new Belarus power station. Nestorenko died in August 2009 as a result of radiation damage. Here's his introduction to radiation protection after the Chernobyl catastrophe. Since the Chernobyl catastrophe, more than 5 million people in Belarus, Ukraine, and European Russia continued to live in the contaminated territories. Many thousands more live in other European countries contaminated with radiation, including Sweden, Finland, Norway, Scotland, Britain, and Wales. Radiation protection is necessary for all of these people. After the catastrophe, there were enormous efforts to introduce countermeasures in Belarus, Ukraine, and Russia to relocate hundreds of thousands of people and to try to lessen exposure to radioactive contamination. Steps that were taken included restricted food consumption and changes in food preparation, as well as changes in agricultural, fishery, and forestry practices. The situation in regard to radiation protection in the contaminated territories places public health advocates in what is described in Russian as between an upper and lower millstone, and in the West as between a rock and a hard place. Authorities allocate as little as possible to provide financial resources for rehabilitation and disaster management, and at the same time are reluctant to accept data about dangerous levels of contamination of populations, food, and the environment. These attitudes hold for officials practically everywhere. The reluctance on the part of officials to acknowledge the truth about Chernobyl's consequences has led to concerned citizens organizing to find additional sources of information and devising ways to help those who are suffering. Hundreds of such public, local, national, and international organizations have been created, such as Children of Chernobyl, Physicians of Chernobyl, Widows of Chernobyl, and liquidators' unions in Belarus, Ukraine, Russia, and many other countries, including Germany, Austria, France, Switzerland, Canada, the United States, Ireland, and Israel. In 1987, initiated by physicist and humanist Andrei Sakharov, the Belarusian Institute of Radiation Safety, BELRAD, was established as an independent public organization devoted to helping Belarusian children, those who suffered most after the catastrophic contamination from Chernobyl. For 21 years, the BELRAD Institute has collected an extensive database in the field of radiation protection and has become unique as a non-governmental Chernobyl center for both scientific and practical information. This chapter 4 is based primarily on the BELRAD materials. That was the introduction to Radiation Protection After the Chernobyl Catastrophe, written by the late Vasily Nestorenko and his son Alexei. The next section on food is of concern because it shows that radioactive food continued to be exported from the affected areas, and the same might be happening now. Chernobyl's radioactive contamination of food and people. In many European countries, levels of iodine-131, cesium-134 and 137, strontium-90, and other radionuclides in milk, dairy products, vegetables, grains, meat, and fish increased drastically immediately after the catastrophe, sometimes as much as a thousandfold. Up until 1991, the United States imported food products with measurable amounts of Chernobyl radioactive contamination, mostly from Turkey, Italy, Austria, West Germany, Greece, Yugoslavia, Hungary, Sweden, and Denmark. These products included juices, cheeses, pasta, mushrooms, hazelnuts, sage, figs, tea, thyme, juniper, caraway seeds, and apricots. Average levels of incorporated cesium-137 and strontium-90 in the heavily contaminated territories of Belarus, Ukraine, and European Russia did not decline, but rather increased from 1991 to 2005. Given that more than 90% of the current radiation fallout is due to cesium-137, with a half-life of about 30 years, we know that the contaminated areas will be dangerously radioactive for roughly the next 3 centuries. However much money is allocated by any government for radiation protection, No nation has the ability to provide total protection from radiation for populations living in contaminated areas and eating locally produced vegetables, forest products, and fish and game that are contaminated with radionuclides. Thus, it is of prime importance that radiation monitoring capability be established on the local level so that citizens have access to the information and the ability to monitor their own locally produced food and to actively participate in organizing and carrying out radiation protection. Too often, central data monitoring repositories have little incentive to ensure that people around the country get the information that they should have. At the end of 1993, in order to monitor food radiation, the BELRAD Institute, with support from the State Belarus Committee of Chernobyl Affairs, created 370 public local centers for radiation control to monitor foodstuffs in the contaminated areas. That was text from page 289 that you can read up on the free PDF file on the complete book on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. Vasily Nestorenko's organization, the Institute of Radiation Safety, BELRAD, developed and used a radiation counter that not only gives the intensity of radiation like a Geiger counter, but specific information of what radionuclides are emitting that radiation. Here's how it works. That's page 294 from the book. For effective radiation protection, especially for children, it is necessary to monitor not only food, but also to directly monitor radionuclides incorporated into the body. From 1995 to 2007, BELRAD conducted measurements of absorbed radionuclides in about 300,000 Belarusian children. Measurements of the cesium-137 contamination is carried out by automated complex spectrometry of internal radiation, utilizing an individual radiation counter. The Institute of Ecological and Medical Systems in Kiev, Ukraine, makes the equipment. The BELRAD Institute has 8 such IRC Scanner 3M instruments, which measure the activity of incorporated gamma radionuclides, such as cesium-137, cesium-134, radon-226, thorium-232, cobalt-60, iodine-131, and others. They measure these radionuclides in an individual body and give the specific dose. That was the end of the quote from page 294. By the way, I saw monitors such as this one in film taken in Belarus. They are portable and immediately produce a visual display of the different isotopes. People can sit or stand in the scanner, and some bring foodstuffs to the clinic and may see with concern how their canned jar of blackberry jam or their side of pork may register high levels of radionuclides. My thought was that such scanners need to be deployed at Fukushima and maintained there into the future to gain information on the nature of the contamination, especially of children, and help determine detoxification efforts, and they need to be under local control. I'm not reading from specific detox treatments here, but you can look them up on the free PDF file on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Back to the text, here's the conclusion. All people living in territories heavily contaminated by Chernobyl fallout continue to be exposed to low doses of chronic radiation. Human beings do not have sense organs to detect ionizing radiation because it cannot be perceived by sight, smell, taste, hearing, or touch. Therefore, without special equipment to identify levels of environmental contamination, it is impossible to know what radionuclide levels are in our food and water or have been incorporated into our bodies. The simplest way to ensure radiation safety in all areas contaminated by Chernobyl is to monitor food for incorporated radionuclides. Analysis of levels of incorporated gamma radionuclides by individual spectrometry and radioactive monitoring of local food in many Belarusian locations have demonstrated a high correlation between cesium-137 food contamination and the amount of radionuclides in humans, and most importantly in children. Many people suffer from continuing chronic low-dose radiation 23 years after the catastrophe, owing primarily to consumption of radioactively contaminated food. An important consideration is the fact that given an identical diet, a child's radiation exposure is 3 to 5-fold higher than that of an adult. Since more than 90% of the radiation burden nowadays is due to cesium-137, which has a half-life of about 30 years, contaminated areas will continue to be dangerously radioactive for roughly the next 3 centuries. Experience has shown that existing official radioactive monitoring systems are inadequate, not only in the countries of the former Soviet Union. Generally, the systems cover territories selectively, do not measure each person, and often conceal important facts when releasing information. The common factor among all governments is to minimize spending for which they are not directly responsible, such as the Chernobyl meltdown, which occurred 23 years ago. Thus, officials are not eager to obtain objective data of radioactive contamination of communities, individuals, or food. Under such circumstances, which are common, an independent system of public monitoring is needed. Such an independent system is not a substitute for official responsibility or control, but is needed to provide regular, voluntary monitoring of food for each family, which would determine the radionuclide level in each person. We have to take responsibility not only for our own health, but for the health of future generations of humans, plants, and animals, which all can be harmed by mutations resulting from exposure to even the smallest amount of radioactive contamination. That was the appeal by the late Vasily Nestorenko, who died of radiation poisoning shortly before this book was finally printed. And here's the conclusion of Chernobyl: Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. It is impossible to forget Chernobyl. The growing data about the negative consequences of the Chernobyl catastrophe for public health and nature does not bode well for optimism. Without special large-scale national and international programs, morbidity and mortality in the contaminated territories will increase. Morally, it is inexplicable that the experts associated with the nuclear industry claim it is time to forget Chernobyl. Sound and effective international and national policy for mitigation of Chernobyl's consequences must be based on the principle: it is necessary to learn and minimize the consequences of this terrible catastrophe. Conclusion. U.S. President John F. Kennedy, speaking about the necessity to stop atmospheric nuclear tests, said in June 1963, "The number of children and grandchildren with cancer in their bones, with leukemia in their blood, or with poison in their lungs might seem statistically small to some in comparison with natural health hazards. but this is not a natural health hazard, and it is not a statistical issue. The loss of even one human life, or the malformation of even one baby, who may be born long after we are gone, should be of concern to us all. Our children and grandchildren are not merely statistics towards which we can be indifferent. End quote by John F. Kennedy. The Chernobyl catastrophe demonstrates that the nuclear industry's willingness to risk the health of humanity and our environment with nuclear power plants will result not only theoretically but practically in the same level of hazard as nuclear weapons. That was the last of a four-part reading from the extraordinary book Chernobyl: Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, compiled by Alexei Yablokov, member of the Russian Academy of Science, and Vasily Nestorenko, until his death, director of BELRAD, and his son Alexei Nestorenko. They collected over 1,000 titles and more than 5,000 printed and internet publications that reflect the impact of Chernobyl radiation not just on the health of human beings, but on the whole ecosystem. With the help of the U.S. editor and medical doctor Jeanette Sherman, the book was published in 2009 in the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences and promptly ignored. However, the authors and editor are now, as of April 2011, offering the book for free as PDF file, and they're placing a new print run back into circulation. This is essential information for all of us who want to make sense of the Fukushima disaster and make an informed decision as to what to do about nuclear power and the so-called nuclear renaissance. Order the book or download the PDF file via a link on TUC Radio's website. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.